Chris Paul, jump pass ahead of the half-court line to Crowder. Finds Booker on top. Booker's been quiet early. Circles around Holiday, passes to Paul. Fakes on the three, steps inside, and drains the 15-footer to go up five.
Well, Chris, Drew Holiday takes another poor shot, takes on the center, and then poor shot leads to excellent offense.
Chris Paul, front court, 25 seconds to go. Stops, 14-footer, splashes it home, and the Suns have gone up seven. Here's Holiday, walks into a three, and connects! I mean, the man was 3 for 16 from the field and just hit the big three.
Caramel chocolates.
82-79, Milwaukee. Middleton up high against Booker. He'll send it left side, Holiday, as the shot clock dips under 10. Bridges guarding. Holiday going to his left, out to the wing with five. Crowder's got him. Inside to Giannis. Turns, 10-footer. Goes down, 49 for Giannis. Holiday at the top. Surveying, goes to Giannis just ahead of the free throw line. Hands it off to Middleton, coming to his right, fading, jumper's good! Tough one with 55 seconds to go. Paul gets it into Booker, who wheels for three, missed it, contested rebound. P.J. Tucker's got it, he'll run out the clock. 50 years in the waiting. Giannis Antetokounmpo scores 50 in an MVP performance, delivering the 2021 NBA championship to the Milwaukee Bucks.
Man, I couldn't leave. You know, there was a job that had to be finished. You know, I feel like the bubble did not pay us justice. You know, give credit to Miami Heat. They played great, but it did not pay us justice. Like, everybody was feeling homesick. We're a family-oriented team, wanted to see our families. But, you know, coming back, I was like, this is my city, you know. Trust me, they believed in me, they believed in us. Even when we were lost, the city still was like on our side. And you know, obviously I wanted to get the job done, you know, but that's my stubborn side. Like, it's easy to go somewhere and go and win a championship with somebody else. It's easy. I could go, I don't want to put anybody in the spot, but I could go to a super team and, you know, just do my part and win a championship, still won. But this is the hard way to do it, and this is the way I chose to do it. And we did it. We did it, man.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. The Bucks beat the Suns 105-98 to win the NBA Finals. Led by Giannis, dropping 50 on the Suns. Unbelievable. Let's talk to Jarrett Sutton about that incredible performance last night. What up, Sutton?
What's up, Steven? How are we doing this morning? What a way to start the segment with Giannis's comments there. That gave me chills. Just to see them hoist the trophy last night. Have a lot of good friends in the Bucks front office. What a night for small market teams, and what a night for Giannis, who has completely transformed himself into a superstar, a megastar, MVP, but now he's an NBA champion, got over the hump. And what a performance last night. You got to tip your cap to him. Bucks are champions, they deserve it, it's because of Giannis.
Okay, so let's try to put this performance that we saw from Giannis in perspective. Not only in the game last night, I mean, he scored 50 in game six to close out the series. And, maybe they could have won again in Phoenix, but I don't think they wanted to tempt fate. They wanted to close it out game six in Milwaukee and avoid going to Phoenix in game seven. But, hey, they won a game seven on the road already against the Nets and overcame a terrific performance by Kevin Durant. So who's to say they couldn't have done it? But they get the win at home. They win the championship at home. Giannis scores 50 points, and I was retweeting all the different things people were saying about Giannis last night, and one of my favorites, just running through the entire series and what the Bucks were up against. They were down 2-0. They were down 2-0, and it looked like, wow, just Phoenix is that good. Phoenix is going to roll right through Milwaukee. And we didn't know if Giannis was 100%. Remember, we were a few weeks ago, we thought his season was over and that injury was going to cost the Bucks a chance at a championship. And not only did he come back from the injury, but he played. I mean, I don't. How could you ask any more from him? Yeah. How could you expect any more from him? But Shea Serrano tweeted out after the Bucks were down 0-2, game three, must win. You don't want to go down, 3-0. He puts up 42-12-4 to win game three. Game four, 26 points, 14 rebounds, 8 blocks, and an all-time game-saving block at the rim that we'll talk about forever. One of the plays that will be replayed every year around this time, and we'll watch it and remember that terrific block when the game was on the line. Then, game five, 32 points, 9 boards, 6 blocks, and he has the all-time game-saving alley-oop when the clock was winding down. It was under 15 seconds, and they were only up 1, and then Holiday comes away with a steal. And how many times will we watch that alley-oop? I mean, who else is athletic enough to be able to grab that pass, slam it home, and then give the Bucks a 3-point lead to give them the win? And then last night, with a chance to win the series, scores 50 with 14 boards and 5 blocks. That's never been done in the finals before. And goes 17 of 19 from the free throw line. And so the one weakness that everyone criticized him for, that became a strength last night. How do you put all of this in perspective compared to other great performances you've seen in the NBA Finals?
Well, I think the perspective for me is the postseason is a whole another chapter in a season, right? You have your preseason, you have your regular season. And then if you can get into the playoffs are another beat to your season. It's a long process. Every series has their different storylines. You just touched on the Nets series, going to a game seven, like the wear and tear of that series, the pressure of that series to get out of that round, to beat Kevin Durant. Injuries were a part of that, obviously. We can talk about that. But the reality was Giannis was great in that series. And a game seven, I've always... But Giannis is a 2-time MVP. He's a 5-time All-Star. He's 5-time All-NBA, 4-time All-Defensive Player. He's the most improved player. He's been Defensive Player of the Year. And now he's an NBA champion. And it's a different conversation now for Giannis because I always was curious if he could get over the hump. I knew he was a great player. I knew he developed and came into his own. You know, we've seen the videos of him coming out in the draft, and being so skinny and frail, and he had a lot of potential. We always talk about potential, but could he really become what we all thought he could become? And I would say there was a lot of people that didn't know if he could ever even get to this place where he's a starter in an NBA game. That was back when he was a rookie. He shot 37% from three as a rookie, and then he blew up and got stronger and changed his body and changed his position. And so it starts there, and I think this year, coming out of the bubble, and he talked about a little bit in his press conference, I think there was a lot going on in the bubble. There was a lot of, I think, Giannis, not hate, but just a lot of comments around, Giannis isn't going to be able to do this within Milwaukee. Giannis is going to have to move on and go to a bigger market and kind of have a super team. This is what makes this moment so special, in my opinion, is he did it in Milwaukee. He did it with the team that drafted him. It's a small market. And by the way, the injury in the Atlanta series, I'm going to go back to that because Giannis was told that if he wanted to get back to playing 100%, he had to take 2 months off, and that it was going to at least be 4 weeks where he had to rest and be off of his knee. He rested for probably a week and a half, and his team was able to get through that period without him and just weather the storm. And then Giannis comes back. He was not healthy in the playoffs after that injury. And that injury was the exact same play, the same action, the same rotation where the ball screen happens, he shows, he's trying to get back. He actually takes a path where he pivots back off that knee and blocks that shot on DeAndre Ayton. It's the exact same play with Clint Capella where that knee hyperextended. So the toughness that Giannis had to show, and that's always been in the back of my mind, is, can Giannis get through the playoffs? Can Giannis get through being that guy in the playoffs? Because it's hard. It's not an easy task. You have to have pieces around him. Chris Middleton was great. They got Drew Holiday in the trade with us. He was great. P.J. Tucker. I mean, you got to have role players to win a championship. It's not all Giannis, but Giannis won this series, and Giannis is the reason why the Bucks are champions. And it's a testament of him staying in Milwaukee, staying the course. I give John DeHorst a lot of credit there, general manager. Mike Budenholzer was great. He adjusted in the finals really well. His staff did a terrific job. Bobby Portis was great for them. They had energy off the bench. And I just thought their role players stepped up in moments when they needed them to step up. And Giannis was terrific. There's nothing you can say more about it. He was great at the free throw line last night. I do think that was somewhat of an anomaly. But the five block shots, I mean, he was just everywhere defensively. And he's been in pain. He has not been healthy. He doesn't show it. He has a lot of pressure on that knee. I think he's putting less pressure in games. But really, you can see it sometimes in his face. So much was made last night about, oh, well, he's fatigued and he's gassed. He wasn't fatigued. Giannis doesn't get tired. He was in pain. It was his knee. And he played through that. And that's why he's a star. And that, to me, was the one chip that I want to see. Take all the accolades away from it. Giannis is an elite MVP player. But can he win a championship? And to do that in Milwaukee, you got to fight through some things. And he had to fight through injuries. And he came through that on the other end, and they're champions. And you got to give him a ton of credit. He's a great star to pull for. He's a great dude. I know so much is made about the quotes he's given in his pressers throughout this series. But he's a superstar that you can really get behind. And especially in a small market like Milwaukee, we get that with Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. That's what Giannis is in Milwaukee. And that, to me, is really a special thing.
And like you said, when you factor in the severity of that knee injury and really what we thought was going to happen, we didn't think he was going to come back as soon as he did. And when he did come back, we didn't think he'd be as effective as he was. And as you mentioned, he doesn't mean that knee injury disappeared. He still had to battle through it and wasn't 100%. When you factor all that in, I mean, this has to be considered one of the greatest performances we've ever seen in the NBA Finals, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, Stephen, you know, in basketball, it's all about playing your role, right? The quote is, be elite in your role. Well, Giannis, to be elite, he's got to be super physical, super aggressive, downhill, taking contact. It's not like he's a shooter, right? It's not like he can play through that injury and play on the perimeter and play out of screens and shoot the ball. Giannis has to go to the rim. Giannis defensively has to be around the rim. Giannis has to take a ton of contact constantly. And he had to do that while playing hurt. I mean, that's a tough thing to do. And when you're the guy, when you're the star, and I've said this before on your show, some guys don't want that. They don't want, they want to be the main option, right? They're coming up through the draft and they get into the NBA and they want to be a star and they want to be, you know, up there at the top with the elite players in the league. And then they get there and they don't understand what that means when you get in the playoffs. It's a whole other beast to your season and to your career, because you're always going to be in the conversation of what did you do in the playoffs. And Giannis was getting that chatter last year. So I think that, to me, is, it's not just the performance last night, which is going to be remembered without question. When we talk about finals performances, Giannis at home in a game six to close it out, to go for 50, 14 rebounds, 5 blocks. He was 64% from the field, and he was 17 to 19 from the free throw line. I mean, that's big time. And those 19 free throws, that's with wear and tear. And I don't think he was fatigued, but I do think he was in pain, and he played through that. There was times last night where Budenholzer was holding on to some timeouts because he wanted to keep them just in case they needed to go to them late. But Giannis was in pain. They needed to call a timeout to get him off his feet for a few minutes, just to give him a little bit of a break. That, to me, is just Giannis fighting through that. Chris Middleton did that, too. And I also think, Stephen, this is a big part of Giannis, the unselfishness to know that he's playing at such an elite level. And we talk about ISO basketball, put the ball in your best player's hands. And what did the Bucks do last night when they needed a bucket? They went to their DHO to get Chris Middleton into his spot where it's his best spot on the floor, that mid-range pull-up going right, and they stayed true to their Robin, if you will. And Giannis puts the ball in Chris's hands to hit a massive shot in that moment. And Chris wasn't making shots like he's usually capable of making shots. That's the trust that Giannis has in his other guys, and that's why the Bucks got through that period when Giannis was out. There's that culture that is built and sustained, and it's not just Giannis. There's a lot of guys that make that happen. Jrue Holiday is a big part of that. But Giannis is the dude, and Giannis is the reason why it goes. And to me, that is what I'm taking away from the series and why, to me, going into the series, I wanted Giannis to show that part of his greatness, if you will. And I never knew if he could get to that point, and he's done it. And he's put his stamp on that because of his performance last night.
Jared Sutton's our guest, and they were talking a lot about, and Giannis, when he was at the podium, talking about how he had been in Milwaukee with Chris Middleton for 8 years, and they stuck it out, and they finally accomplished their goal of winning a championship. Middleton, drafted 39th overall out of Texas A&M, was traded, kind of an afterthought in a trade, from the Pistons to the Bucks, a stop in the G League, and now he was the second most, really, if you're not going to name Giannis the MVP, then Middleton would have been the MVP. Giannis deserved it, but Middleton, before last night, there were people saying that, hey, Middleton deserves consideration for being the finals MVP. He hit, and his game summed up in that one shot, that huge shot that he hit that extended the lead from 4-6 when it was under a minute left. But do you remember the trade? Do you remember how the Bucks got him?
I don't remember what was a part of the trade, no.
So the Bucks acquired Brandon Knight, Chris Middleton, and a center, Vyacheslav Kravtsov from the Pistons, in a sign-and-trade deal for guard Brandon Jennings.
Mm.
And that trade was in July of 2013. And even reading through this, I mean, the headliners there were Brandon Knight and of course, Brandon Jennings. And Middleton was considered more of just like a not a throw-in, but just a piece of the deal. And all these years later, he was the second most important player on an NBA championship team. I know how much you love basketball, but you also love stories like that. And you love the idea of a second-round pick that was basically a throw-in and a trade that goes to another franchise, has to you know, make his bones in the G League, and then with the same team 8 years later wins a championship. Those are the kind of stories you've got to love, especially as an NBA scout, right?
Absolutely. You know, it's a second-round pick. He was actually drafted a few spots after my teammate Kim English. They went to the same team in Detroit, and Chris and Kim were friends. We had competed against Chris in college when he was at A&M. My assistant general manager, Bryson Graham, was roommates with Chris Middleton. So I've heard all the Chris Middleton stories of him at College Station and just type of dude he is. You know, very laid-back guy. And you kind of see that, you know, on the floor. He is, you know, a guy that wants to win. He's a really good player, but he's a great, great teammate. Most importantly, you see the connection him and Drew have, too. I think that was a big reason Drew really wanted to go to Milwaukee. So Chris is a huge part of this championship. I think the word for me is patience. So much about our world is projecting out a player, right? How quick can they make it to the NBA, and how quick can they reach a specific you know, player value, right? Is it a starter? Is it a key reserve? Is it a core franchise player? How long does that take? What's the development process look like? But the real thing with a player like Chris Middleton is patience. I mean, Chris Middleton had to go to Fort Wayne, Indiana, and play for the Mad Ants in the D League at the time. I mean, that to me is, you know, it was a long road for Chris Middleton to get to this point. And you know, trades happen. You put young players a part of deals to acquire, you know, stars to go win and win now. But I also think there's something to be said of, you know, we're going through this right now in New Orleans of, you know, we got two young core pieces in Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson. We're trying to build around those two pieces with young players. And patience is especially in a small market. You know, that's something that this team had to do. And I give John Horst a lot of credit because he built the team the right way, and he knew what pieces he had to add. And there was a lot of conversation, is Giannis going to extend his max deal last summer? Just because I feel like when teams lose and they don't make it to the finish line, the immediate conversation is that star is going to leave. That star is going to go, and that star can't win there. And to me, it's patience with the player, and it's patience with the front office. Because if you stay together, and that's what Giannis's points were last night. That's why he was so emotional. Because when you stay together and reach the finish line, you accomplish something that's so special, rare, and unique, and it's memorable. You have that forever. And that, to me, and you saw the emotion with him and Chris, too. I mean, Giannis starts talking about Chris in his presser right after the game. I mean, those two guys are interconnected, and they stayed together, and both those guys could have gone somewhere else and played and had a chance to win a championship just to say they won a championship. But this one's going to mean more to them. And so for me, yeah, it's the story of Chris Middleton, but it dates back to when he was drafted. It's how they were built. This team was built. And it's putting the right pieces together, having the right coach in place, playing the right style around Giannis, who is not a modern-day stretch big who can't – I mean, he had a three last night. He's not a three-point shooter. He can make a three here and there. But that's not his game, and you have to build around a star like that. We're going to have to do that with Zion Williamson. He's not a three-point threat, but he's a dominant big man, and he can do a lot of things at the rim. And I do think we have a chance to win a championship if we build it the right way. But we're in that phase that the Bucks were in years back. And that, to me, is the name of the game, is being patient, making sure you're putting in the right pieces and you're bringing in the right people into your culture that want to be there, that want to win, and they don't want to just find the exit, the nearest exit, to go, you know, try to recover or recoup their image that's been hurt because they lost in the playoffs. No, you stay where you are, you fight through that, you build it the right way, and you have a chance to win a championship, and they were able to do that this year. And that to me, is the whole story of all these guys that are going to be remembered on this team, because Drew Holiday was, you know, an overlooked player. He's always been a guy that's been underrated, and now he's an NBA champion. Now everybody's seeing with Drew Holiday, the importance of Drew Holiday. Brooke Lopez, Bobby Portis was written off. I mean, Bobby Portis's energy, he wasn't doing this in Chicago, but Milwaukee embraced him, and that's why he loves it in Milwaukee. It's just building the team the right way and doing it the right way.
Dude, there was a stretch where Brooke Lopez took the game over. Had that flip shot, had the dunk, had, you know, he created off the dribble. Bobby Portis, what did he have, 16 points off the bench? And then for a while there, it was like Bobby Portis versus Frank Kaminsky. And all of a sudden he was in there, and he made a couple of big baskets. But you offer a unique perspective on Drew Holiday. And that was a trade that the Bucks needed to make to get over the hump. And you're right. We could be talking about this trade years from now as a trade that the Pelicans made that could eventually help them build a championship contender. But I wanted to ask you about him because, you know, everything you read, and I'm looking even back at the release when the trade was made, before you even get into what kind of player he was, the contributions he made to New Orleans and the Gulf Coast region, and, of course, his wife, Lauren Holiday, who was a longtime member of the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team, and everything they did for the community, and everything you read about him is what an outstanding person he was. And it was almost as hard for New Orleans to lose him as a person for what he did on and off the court versus what he was as a player. But then when you look for a team, like you said, with the Pelicans in the situation of trying to build a championship contender, that's a trade that really you got to make, because you end up with two future first-round picks, the right to swap two additional first-round picks, Steven Adams, Eric Bledsoe. It's one of those deals that you look back and you have to, you know, a lot of teams that end up being contenders make that kind of deal where it hurts to trade a player, but you get the type of building blocks that you need. And so, but this worked out perfectly. You'll never hear anyone in Milwaukee complain about how many draft picks they gave up to get Drew Holiday. But that was a trade that clearly helped both teams. But you're right, that guy, even though he didn't have a great shooting night last night, they couldn't have won this championship without him.
Yeah, well, when you look back on Drew and that trade we made, Drew is a championship human being. I mean, he's just a champion in life. You touched on his wife. I mean, we talk about adversity. Drew had to step away from basketball when his wife was ill. There was a lot of, you know, conversation that she might not make it through. She's dealing with, you know, brain aneurysm, and they had their child at the time as well. So he just had to be a dad, and he had to be a husband before basketball. To step away from the game and then come back. And then also, you know, Drew was the guy with New Orleans when he was in New Orleans that was with Anthony Davis, and he wanted to be in New Orleans. This is a guy that's a loyal dude. He's just an incredible person. I can't say enough about him. We only had him for 1 year. I was at training camp for about 4 or 5 days and got to meet him, got to spend time with him. And I mean, you kind of take a step back. He's the piece that you always want to have associated with any organization. Any team would want Drew Holiday. It's not just his basketball skill and what he brings to a team, his leadership, but it's just how he carries himself and how he interacts with people. and just cares about people. And that's most important about Jrue Holiday. The player, you know, like you touched on, we have Zion Williamson and Brandon, young players. And Jrue knew that we were in a kind of a rebuild mode, and he wanted to be a part of that, and he stuck that out with us. We knew that Jrue was getting older. There's a reason why Jrue is going to play for the Olympic team. He wants to play for the Olympic team and represent his country, and he knows he's getting older, and he wanted an opportunity to win a championship. It wasn't that he didn't want to be in New Orleans, but we knew that long-term, Jrue wasn't going to be able to do that with us, with where we were at in our process. And we found a suitor with Milwaukee. We did not want to, send Jrue to any Western Conference team. West is as deep as it is. And we sent him to Milwaukee. We got, pillars back and pieces back that we really need that are going to be really helpful for us this summer and into the future. But we wanted to put Jrue in a position where he had an opportunity to accomplish his goals. And that was the reason why I think the deal, looking back, is such a win for both teams, because we wanted to do right by Jrue, and I think Jrue wanted to do right by us. And that's a great thing. And I think that's why, and you ask anybody in New Orleans, media, or anybody that's associated with the Pelicans front office, Gail Benson, our owner, anybody you speak to, they will talk long and extensively about Jrue Holiday and the impact he made in New Orleans. There's talk about, trying to retire his number in New Orleans. That's the impact that this guy made in the city. And so I think we're, celebrating Jrue because he's a champion, and that's what all we could have wanted for, just because we knew that probably wasn't going to be an opportunity that he could do in New Orleans any further. He did that. He tried with Anthony Davis. He tried with Zion. But where we are, it was the right decision. So I'm happy for Jrue, and I'm happy for the Bucks because they've embraced him. And they have definitely, given feedback of just what Jrue has meant to them and just how he's been able to gel with Giannis and Chris and, Bobby and all these other players. I mean, that's the type of impact Jrue Holiday makes on any organization, and it's what he did in Milwaukee.
I want to ask you about Mike Budenholzer, the head coach of the Bucks, who I tweeted out. I think Jake even liked the tweet. When Jake likes the tweet, that means it's good. He always looks like he just smelled something bad, or he just smelled a fart. He just has this look. I was like, oh, what was that? But he has an interesting story. He played at Pomona College, played basketball and golf at Pomona College, and then went and played professional basketball in Denmark, and then comes back to the United States in 1994, and was hired by the San Antonio Spurs as a video coordinator. So mm-hmm. He comes back, he's a video coordinator. And then after being a video coordinator for 2 years, he becomes an assistant coach under Greg Popovich and was part of a staff that won 4 NBA championships with the Spurs. Left there, went to the Atlanta Hawks, and I paid attention to the Hawks when he was there because they had the junkyard dog on that team, Damari Carroll. Yep. They had a guy like a Damari Carroll for the Atlanta Hawks. And look, he won 60 games with them 1 year and went to the conference finals. And you almost kind of looked at that team like, how in the hell is this team winning 60 games and in the conference finals? And then they made him the director of basketball ops or whatever. Things went sideways there. But he won NBA Coach of the Year when he was with Atlanta, then ends up going to Milwaukee, won 60 games with them, but they got beat in the conference finals, has won a Coach of the Year there. And I'm just curious, because that's a hell of a resume now. You were a longtime assistant under one of the greatest coaches ever in Greg Popovich. You had some really good success in a short amount of time with the Atlanta Hawks, and now here you are with Milwaukee, and you helped get them over the hump. What about his reputation, Mike Budenholzer, as a coach, and what he brought to Milwaukee to help them get over the hump?
Yeah, it's very similar to Eric Spoelstra and Pat Riley. Spo started as a video coordinator, worked his way up. He's one of the more respected head coaches. He's won NBA championships. He has stayed in Miami. There's a reason for that. He's built in Miami's culture. I know culture gets thrown around a lot, so I hate to use that word because I know it's how cliche it is. But, the Miami Heat are the Miami Heat. They operate differently than most teams, and a lot of that is because of Spo and Pat Riley, and it all starts back to when Spo was in the video room. Same thing could be said for Bud under Pop in San Antonio. And when Bud was hired, and left San Antonio, there was already that chatter that this is going to be the next up-and-coming head coach. And, you know, you touched on, he went to Atlanta, was very successful there. There's a lot of other things taking place in Atlanta. Ends up in Milwaukee, and I think he's just a guy that has always been recognized and understood that, that he is a terrific coach. He waited for his opportunity and just worked his way up in San Antonio. And again, it, you know, when you're a part of a championship organization, you work for coaches that have had a lot of success, that believe in grooming their assistants. I mean, there's still assistants that always get brought up with the Miami teams and the San Antonio teams. You know, that's a testament to just those organizations that have developed those coaches that have gone on to have success with other organizations and franchises. It's great for the league. You know, it's great for the coaching profession and that industry. But Budenholzer, even going into the finals, you know, there's a lot of made about Budenholzer and not adjusting and not making necessary adjustments and not helping Giannis. And, you know, coaches sometimes can fall victim to the moment where, and coaches can be stubborn in that moment. They want to stick to their game plan. They want to stick to their strategy. And Budenholzer adjusted in this series, for sure, and just how they were playing, how they were defending, offense they were running, knowing Giannis wasn't fully healthy, implementing Bobby Portis into the lineup to where he's playing 22 minutes. I mean, Bobby Portis wasn't playing a lot of minutes in that Atlanta series or in that Nets series. He was playing spot minutes. So he adjusted, and I think that you look at his interactions with assistants, too. The assistants are involved in the game, and that's the sign of a great coach, in my opinion, especially a coach that can identify, I need to change, I need to make an adjustment, I see an issue, I'm going to change that now, and I'm not just going to double down on that. I'm going to put players out there that I think need to be out there, and maybe that my assistant is telling me needs to be out there. That, to me, is a sign of a great coach. And so I'm not surprised that Bud's now getting this, you know, recognition, because he deserves it. He's a great coach, and anybody in the NBA would tell you that. But Budenholzer's been around for a long time. Even when he was assistant in San Antonio, there was a lot of chatter about Budenholzer being the next up-and-comer, and here he is, and he's won an NBA championship. His dad's a head coach, was a head coach. I love listening to Budenholzer talk, because he's just a downer. You see it on the bench, too, right? He's not wearing, you know, anything flashy. He just has that black pullover that he wears all the time. That's the type of guy he is. Easy to talk to. My good buddy is the director of global scouting for the Bucks and has a great relationship with Budenholzer. And to kind of see them celebrating last night, and him just kind of letting his guard down and being around the staff, it's cool to see, because that's what you want for any organization.
I don't even know what the hell this means, but somebody tweeted out last night and made me laugh out loud. Mike Budenholzer looks like a regional manager, and I don't know what a regional manager looks like, but I guess it's Mike Budenholzer.
I guess Dwight could play him in a movie, right? I mean,
sure.
I kind of see that.
So we're out of time because of Jake says we're out of time, because he knows what I was going to finish with. He knows, so I'm just gonna 60 seconds.
Okay.
What happened in the Kansas City Pickleball Championship?
So long ago.
Well, no, it's not that. It's really not that long ago at all. Because last week,
we got Wichita listening.
Wichita is listening, and they want. I just want to know, Jarrett. You don't have to. We don't have to go on and on about this. Was it overconfidence? Was it having a teammate that had a $200 paddle that said, "Oh, I'm going to beat everyone because of this paddle"?
It wasn't $200.
Was it a bad? Was it what was it?
$175. With shipping and tax.
With shipping and tax. Was it just a bad matchup for you? Who did you lose to again, Jake?
You lost to the Fox Four
sports department, so you can't say, well, you lost to better athletes, unless, of course, you guys would admit the Fox Four sports department are better athletes than you. I just want to know what happened, because I'm here with Jake, so I want to know from you, and I want you to be honest, Jared, because if we don't have honesty on this show, then I'm going to tell you what, we ain't got nothing. And we may not have anything, because I'm not sure this show's honest.
And after that shot that Harold hit, I mean, they had all the momentum.
But
I mean,
we're not saying you lost to Julian Marquez, you lost to Cesanovic, you lost to Harold Koontz and Rob Collins. Nothing against those guys, but on paper,
sandbagging.
That on paper,
they're pretending like they didn't know the rules and stuff.
On paper, you guys were heavy favorites. I just want to know what happened, Jared, and that's it. And then we can move on.
Well, so first off, I had a blast, number one. Number two would be, I think we just need a challenge for next year, really. I think this is what it comes down to. We got a first year under our belt. It's like talking about Giannis. You know, you go through some struggles, you stay with your team. You know, you stick with your core, you stick to Jake.
Is Jake a good teammate, though? Is he a good teammate?
He's a great teammate. He's a great teammate. You know, it's our first run at this. We'll be back. The funny thing is, I mean, Jake said it. Harold's shot was the shot of the night.
Harold Kuntz, diving, lost his shoe, coming out of his shoes, put it on the line. Harold Kuntz literally came out of his shoes to win this thing.
Yeah, it was big time. And we found our matchup that I thought, man, early on we couldn't score. It was 0-0, right, Jake? I mean, we were just going back and forth.
Even with that expensive paddle, no offense. That surprises me.
Well, not taking advantage.
It was a defensive battle, and we just couldn't overcome it. But we'll be back.
Yeah, we will. We're matched up next year. We already signed. No one's splitting us up.
Nate says he wants Jared Sutton. Now he wants to come in here and split people up.
Well, where's Nate at?
I don't know.
Okay, well.
The core is staying together, Steven. That's how I'll answer that.
Do we need to make some type of big trade here to get you an alternate?
Nope. Small market.
Yeah, there were some people that were trying to get, you know, be added to our bench, you know, be a kind of a rotational player for us. But
who was trying to get in on that?
We're going to stay with the core. Well, we might recruit Jason. I know Jason Anderson, I think, wants to be maybe a part of our group, maybe long term. We'll have to talk to him about that. But, you know, he was coming off an injury, I believe.
He can find his own teammate
list this year. Yeah. So
I think
you might see Jason Anderson back out there.
I think I will add myself as an advisor.
Yeah.
A director of pickleball operations.
That's what it is. That's what it is. We needed that you know, next piece, and I think it stems with you, Steven, of just being there for coaching purposes, maybe some recruiting purposes if we needed it. Yeah.
Instead of a dobo, I'll be a dopo, the director of pickleball ops. I could do that. Jared, thank you for playing, and I thank you for pairing with Jake and his overconfidence, but I will not thank you for losing to the Fox 4 Sports Department because I was
very angry
when I saw that. Jarrett, thank you so much for the time, and happy birthday again to you. Hopefully you enjoyed your birthday celebration and the big birthday kiss I gave you is probably your best present.
Time. Yeah, that's right. I know there's a video of that I'm trying to get.
I've got the video.
I've never been surprised before. That was big time. So I got to thank you guys and thank Sports Radio 810 and Pamela. That event was a blast. It was absolutely fantastic, especially with like the rain and the rain didn't stop us. It was a great night.
It was wonderful, even though you guys lost to the Fox 4 Sports Department. It was still a fantastic night. Thank you.
We'll never live it down.
Well, Jake just gave me the finger, so I'd tell you how he's dealing with it. Jared, thank you for the time, sir. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
You think it was necessary to give me the finger?
I'm just saying break.
I would tell you what, not today, but I think now I want Harold Kuntz on the show, and I get his perspective, what it was like to go up against two Division I athletes and overcome that and become victorious.
We're booked up.
Are we? Yep, for the next several weeks. Yep. I'll see him at training camp maybe. That's then. Right. Back after this on WHB.